Hello, everyone. Welcome to the brave and open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am Paola, and I am an alcoholic. I will be your host for the month of March. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grave and Open meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on aagraven.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you're new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. I'm going to read today's Grave and Daily quote. It's right here. We have to grow or else deteriorate. For us, the status quo can only be for today, never for tomorrow. Change we must. We cannot stand still. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagraven.org, or you will find it on the Graven app every morning. And now, this is an excerpt from this month's Graven magazine. I am learning to be willing to move forward through fear, forward into the unknown. As my old sponsor used to say, we all know you are going to make mistakes. We just like you to make some new ones. Sponsors, they really are Jedis. When I'm tired, I've learned to pause. I listen to what my body has to say. When I have questions or doubt, my higher power answers because I've slowed down enough to listen. Let's start today's with a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 3. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. This will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. I love open meetings because there's no pressure. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. And now I would like to introduce my good friend, Julie. I met Julie at my first AA forum, and from the beginning we connected, sharing, supporting one another, and working together to help the suffering alcoholic. I am so glad you're here, Julie. Thank you.
Thank you, Paola, and thank you for inviting me to be here today. This was our first Southeast Regional Forum in, I believe it was New Orleans. And Paola just started her job as a Lavinia editor, and I was a brand new delegate. And I could see she was just as nervous as I was. And we both Even though we were nervous, our love for AA and for this fellowship and the program, we're willing to put those nerves aside and continue to do the work to help carry the message to the suffering alcoholic. And so I just totally knew that I wanted Paola to be my friend. And so I asked her to be my guest in our North Carolina Area Assembly. And she was my first guest. So when she asked me to do this today, I had to say yes. So, but this is great. I really enjoy the grapevine. So let's start. My name is Julie, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 8th, 2005. And my home group is Turning Point in Raleigh, North Carolina. We meet on Tuesdays, not on Mondays, Tuesdays at 6:30 at Millbrook Baptist Church. If you're in the area, come by and see us. I like the daily quote that we got from the grapevine this morning. I read that every morning when I have my coffee, and it helps with, part of my morning routine. I do that and then a 10-minute meditation, and I'm ready to start the day. So, and it talks about, we have to grow or else we will deteriorate. And I think that through my sobriety, being in general service has forced me to grow. It has given me the opportunity to grow. And I hope I get to touch on that a little bit as we go through. To qualify myself, I grew up in an alcoholic home and my father is alcoholic. And I decided that I would never touch alcohol because I didn't want to continue living in that dysfunction with, fights and broken furniture and just a scary dad. I didn't want to be that person. But when I moved away from Tennessee to North Carolina, I found that I was by myself. I was alone and I didn't understand how to function in this world. And I found out that alcohol gave me the relief. It settled my stomach. It made me pretty. It made me funny. It made me popular. And it did great for a long time, or at least it seemed like a long time until it didn't. And I came to one morning. And I had been on kind of a bender. I'd lost the husband. I'd lost the house. I'd been demoted at my job. And I was in an apartment with three cats because I had decided that, my life goal was just to be the crazy old cat lady. That seemed like a good plan because the cats just didn't seem to mind my character defects and my alcoholism. But I came to one morning, I'd passed out and I was in my jammies and I looked up and this cat told me that I had a drinking problem. And I just cried and this pain came over into my chest and I had realized that I had reached the point of isolation and just desperation. So I reached out to a social worker who I had met before and for marriage counseling, but I'd noticed he had, all these substance abuse certifications and stuff on his wall. And he told me to go to this church on this night at this time. And that was an AA meeting. Now, I had heard of AA, from my father. He got sober when I was 16. But the only experience I had in AA was going to see him pick up one of his chips. And, there was a cake. And I was like, AA has cake. The AA's got food. This is great. But then at that time, the smoke in the room had gone down to the level of the candles. So it was quite a scene, I thought. And, my dad's sponsor was on an oxygen tank and he was sitting in the corner of the room smoking. And I thought, this is just a hotbed of mental health. And so I wasn't so sure that, AA was a solution, but I had seen the changes in my father. So I showed up to this meeting and it was an anniversary meeting and this gentleman was speaking. And the only thing I remember from that meeting was how he had rabbits and that he had gotten drunk and he fell on the rabbits. And the only reason he did not take his life was because he needed someone to care for those rabbits. And I could totally relate to that. All of the other stuff that he spoke about, was kind of gobbledygook. And so now, also at an anniversary meeting, there's a lot of food there. And so, again, I'm thinking AA is very food related, food oriented. But, I've come to realize after visiting a couple of different groups that it was not. So I'd walked into this room. This is another room. This is Big Book in Raleigh. It's one of the older meetings in the room in Raleigh. And you know, I'm so full of shame and so full of fear that I can't look up from my shoes. But I did glance up and my eyes locked on this little tiny old lady who was sitting behind a table, and she looked like she was in charge. But I sat down, you know, in the seats where the newcomers who aren't too sure they want to be there sit. And she came up to me after the meeting and told me she was going to be my sponsor. And then, you know, that's great, you know, because we need people like that for those of us who aren't able to look up from our shoes. And so she became my sponsor. And her plan was for us to meet every week before the meeting in the nursery of the church. And the nursery was exactly where I needed to be because I needed kid gloves and kindergarten style handling to work through these steps. So we'd sit in these rocking chairs in the nursery, and we worked the steps. You know, step one, you know, my life is unmanageable. Yes, because I wanted her to figure out how I could pay all my bills, how I was going to get my job back at work, how I was going to find a new husband. You know, I wanted her to make that manageable. But, you know, she told me quickly that that was not her role as a sponsor, and those things would come if I worked the program. And it has come true. It has. And I now have a life where I've got the job that I've always wanted. And I have the husband. I'm the wife that I get to be that I wasn't for the first husband. And I have lots of friends. When I was drinking, you know, I had these two groups of friends that I would rotate between because, you know, you'd make one mad, you need a different group to go hang out with. And eventually, you know, nobody wanted to hang out with Julie because she was either going to kiss you or punch you. You know, I heard a speaker talk about lining up people, one line of the people that you're going to kiss and one line of the people you're going to punch. And I was like, totally, you know, and after I did either one, kiss or punch you, I was going to cry. And so that was, you know, after a while, that's just not someone you want to hang out with. We worked through the steps in the nursery and the rocking chairs. We talked about, you know, the idea of a higher power. And I totally struggled with that because, you know, I did not grow up in a religious family. We didn't go to church or anything. And you know, it was Christmas with Santa Claus and the Easter was the bunny. And so the God concept was foreign to me. But I could feel the hope in the rooms, right? I walked in the Big Book and it's a huge group, and there's so many different people, and everybody looks different. And there's, you know, there's people who came in driving nice cars and people who came in walking in broken out sneakers. And they were all there and they're chatting and they're having coffee, and the goal is to not drink today. And I could see that. I could feel that, you know, because I'm looking at my shoes, but I could feel it. I could feel that energy, that hope, that love. And so that became my higher power. Now it came to step four. I was so confused. Because there was this row of old timer men, gray hair old men who sat in the front row and the women sat behind them. And as you either passed away or moved away, you would move on down the row. And so these old men told me to do my fourth step. I needed to get a legal pad, a yellow number two pencil, and go up onto a mountain and wait for a big gush of wind, or else, and if I didn't do it right, I was going to drink or die. And, you know, that's just one of those things that those crusty old timers would tell you, you know, the comments like I spilled more than you drank and things like that. And so it scared me so much because now you've given me hope and love, and I no longer want to die. And so I want to make sure I do this right. So I struggled with that, and my sponsor decided it was time for me to make coffee for my home group. And so you show up an hour early because the urns were 100 gallons, and it takes an hour to percolate. And if it's not, you know, ready on time for the meeting, those old guys were going to tell you all about yourself. And so I think it was a trick because when I showed up, there was a whole bunch of other people there who happened to be stuck on their fourth steps also. And we were lining up chairs and perking coffee. And what I found out was that when I'm doing something, when I'm using my hands, when I'm working for the group or AA, my voice works. I can talk. And those people, and there was one lady in particular who looks nothing like me. We have absolutely opposite backgrounds. And she just told me that it was going to be okay and just to write down what I can. And so I did. And I presented that to my sponsor sitting in those rocking chairs in my fifth step. And, you know, there was always that, well, there's not always, I had that thing that I would never tell anybody. And I told it. And she loved me anyway. And we walked into the big room after that. And I still felt the love and the hope and the spirit of AA in that room. And I knew everything was going to be okay. You know, when we talk about our shortcomings and character defects, that's, you know, 20 years later, we're still working on that, right? They still pop up. It's a practice every day, you know, and then some character defects and shortcomings we don't want to let go. And I experienced that in 2020. Now, COVID happened in 2020, so it was a scary time. I was the area chair for North Carolina, and my sister was diagnosed with cancer. And she called me, and so I don't have the best relationship with my family, but she called me, and I knew that was the call to, I need your help. And AA had given me the ability to help my sister in Tennessee. So every 2 weeks, I would drive back and forth between North Carolina and Tennessee to help my sister go through treatments. And that was an experience that spiked my anxiety. So I had dealt with anxiety my whole life, but for, I swear, 15 years, I was rolling great. The steps and the spiritual toolkit and AA and the fellowship, I was rolling great. And then all of a sudden, I'm having issues with anxiety. And I talked to my sponsor about that. And I struggled for 2 years trying to handle everything, because, you know, I've got this because I'm the area chair. I've done all this service work. I go to meetings. I'm into the literature. I should be a spiritual giant. And I wasn't. So we've realized that using the steps, I had to seek outside help. And that was a challenge. And my sponsor let me try it my way for 2 years. And so that was something that taught me that, you know, it's the growth or else we deteriorate. And with every service position that I've held in AA, my world has grown. So like when I was the GSR, the group service representative for my home group, and I'd go to district meetings, my little world of the home group, because spiritually that's all I could handle was that small group of people, grew to the district, which was the size of Raleigh. So then I made more friends. And my spiritual oneness with the world became bigger. I was learning using the traditions to live with people, right? Then, you know, we get into area service. And then my world suddenly grew into the state of North Carolina. And my spiritual growth grew. And I now had friends all over North Carolina. And when I became delegate, I thought I was going to die, you know. But the love of the people, the fellowship, really carried me through, you know, and now my world had grown to the US and Canada, and I have friends all over. And I grew spiritually through that. So service work has been a major, major part of my program, or the program for me that I work. And that was something, you know, and my term as delegate was not easy. And some days you felt like you were lifted up from the fellowship, and sometimes you felt like you were getting beat up by the fellowship. But when I heard everything that I gathered from the fellowship, because we're out there talking to everybody, all I heard was everyone loves AA and they care about AA and we want AA to be there for the future. So now, Now the life that I have is amazing, going through the program and the steps. I've got a group of friends that I can rely on at any time and any problem. And you have this group of friends and you can say things to, and it's held in confidence. And I wasn't used to that. I have a husband who loves me and I love him, and he's in the program also, which makes service work easier because he knows you're going to be out there doing stuff. The most important thing I think about being in general service is that you have to maintain your recovery program. You have to go to your meetings. You've got to continue doing your morning routines. And at night, when I do my 10th step and I lay my head on the pillow, it's not like when I was drinking where I had regrets of where I had been, not the best person that day and who I had harmed and who I need to avoid. Now I lay my head on the pillow and I have more credits than debits when I recount the day. And it's rare that I need to make an amends now, because I can take that pause and I can fix things as soon as they happen. I don't like feeling uncomfortable in myself. And using these program and using these tools, I have this sense of peace and serenity and comfort that I didn't have. And I'd use drinking to try to find that. And this way of life is just such an amazing way to be. And I wish this gift, could be shared by everybody, but you have to earn your seat here. And sometimes I'm grateful for that. And sometimes I'm like, no, I think I am. I have gratitude for my past. We don't shut the door on the past. We just use it to share experience and strength with others, strength and hope. I get to be the intergroup rep for my home group now. Is I thought after I rotated as delegate, I'd become a past delegate and I'd get to just sit in a seat, but they put me back to work. And the intergroup has just been an amazing way to see our direct services, to see, our treatment centers and our corrections, and the grapevine at the intergroup is so fun because they're always doing workshops and skits and talking about all the new things that Grapevine is doing. It's a very exciting time. I just want to thank everybody for tuning in today, and thank you, Paola, for allowing me to be here.
Thank you so much, Julie. Julie, what an inspiration you are. I love when you said, when I'm doing something, my voice works. And I can connect with that always because of what we shared and remembering our primary purpose on why we do the things that we do. And then something else I thought about, no matter what, right? When you were sharing about COVID and your sister, being of service and just taking action and doing all the things, and no matter what, you stay sober. And then you didn't die when you became the delegate. I'm not dying either. That is awesome. Thank you so much, Julie. So I'm going to read now some things and you can stay and listen. These are some announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, where money and spiritually mix. You can find it on AA.org. Graven does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Graven is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagraven.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for aagraven on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Graven books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Graven and your local office. You can also visit the Graven online store at aagraven.org. The A Graven Carry the Message Project allows to help us allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscription to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit agraven.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the Agraven Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on agraven.org. Please follow Graven on Instagram and YouTube too. The new season of Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous, launches March 17. Season 2 takes listeners on a journey across the fellowship, celebrating milestones, exploring how AA reaches anyone, anywhere, and shares stories that highlight the impact of service, self-support, and recovery in action. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch every episode of the upcoming season. And now I get to introduce our second guest, and his name is Robert. He's over 40 years of sobriety. He's a member of the Briarcliff and Chris's friend. And I look forward to hear his story. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you, Paola. Thank you for hosting this today. And really great to hear Julie share. Yeah, I'm up here in New York, and I do chair the Friday night Grand Street meeting on Zoom, 7:30 p.m. on Fridays Eastern Time, if anyone would like to join us. And I do attend the Briarcliff meeting, where we do the read one of the Grapevine stories on tape every week. Big fan of the Grapevine, and I really love the app. I identified a lot with what Julie said. You know, I also, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I learned all about the disease of alcoholism without knowing what it was. You know, things in the house could change very quickly. Things could be really wonderful, having a lot of fun, and then things could get scary in a real hurry. And I was always, you know, I was an only child, so it was really just three of us. So there was a lot of triangulation and a lot of FaceTime with my alcoholic parent. And it, I learned to take my cues from the alcoholic and to be ready to be in defense, you know, taking a defensive posture at any time at a moment's notice. And I really took that with me as I grew up. And as Juliet said also, you know, I really didn't know exactly what it was, because I wasn't seeing the drinking out and open. But whatever it was, I knew that I didn't want to follow in those footsteps. And so as I, you know, got a little bit older, I started developing all the traits that would later come to full flower in my drinking. You know, I've heard the phrase in AA many times that we're as sick as our secrets. And my whole life was secret from everyone. It was from my parents, from my teachers, from my friends. I just did all kinds of dishonest things. I like to steal, you know, sort of petty larceny kinds of things in stores. And I like to, if I would visit you at your home, I might pocket something small off a bookshelf. No reason to do any of these things, just some kind of, you know, some kind of way that my disease was sort of playing out in my young head. I used to stash all my things that I stole in a little place in the woods in a cave. Nothing that I needed in my daily life. Just I had to have something that was hidden away. So, my first real experience was out with alcohol was around 8 or 9 years old at a family gathering. There was a keg of beer that was unpoliced by my aunts and uncles and my parents. So me and my cousins went crazy on it. And what happened to me that day would really set the pattern for my drinking after that. You know, I drank way too much, you know, got really loud. You know, made a fool of myself, and later on got horribly sick. The next day I woke up just feeling horribly sick, the whole nine yards of it. And of course, my reaction to that was, boy, I can't wait to do this again. So, I stored that back in my head somewhere, that for just those couple of hours, all the self-centered fear that I had was accumulating in my head, that I could run away from all that self-centered fear for just a few hours a day with by drinking alcohol. And I attended a meeting in Brooklyn back during the pandemic, and somebody said something that I've really taken with me. They said that they encapsulated their drinking life as the three M's. First, it was a miracle, then it was medicine, then it was misery. And that's really the timeline of how it worked out for me. That first day I drank it. It just felt like this magic elixir. It took away all my feelings of being less than. I'm not good looking enough. I'm not funny enough. I can't fit in. It took that away, and I kept chasing that feeling again, never to really fully recapture it. So at some point, it did become medicine that I was just really doing maintenance drinking, just to keep all those fears tamped down, to keep all the that self-centered fear buried. I had to have my dose every day. And eventually it did become misery. The good feelings that I had initially received from drinking it were all gone. Alcohol at its root is really a depressive, and all it was doing was really amplifying my depressive feelings. But I really did not feel like I could go on without it. The older I got, as I moved through adolescence and adulthood, the more I really needed to rely on alcohol just to have some kind of anesthesia between me and my feelings and my fears about growing into adulthood. I really wanted to run away from all responsibilities. I didn't want to grow up. I was still that kid. I was still that frightened, self-centered kid who didn't think that he knew how to get along in social situations, work situations, professional, whatever it was. And I felt I needed to have that. I needed to put that scrim of alcohol between me and all my fears and all those situations. And I saw my friends and all the people around me growing up and sort of fitting in and growing up along the more traditional lines. And I wanted no part of it. So I kept running away, and gradually my dependence on alcohol just became greater and greater as I got older. I did go to college where, of course, my alcohol really exploded. And then I did get a job in my field. So, like my father before me, my father could be doing a face plant in the living room at night, but that the next morning he was going to work, and that fed his denial, and that fed my denial in the same way, because I was working in my profession. I had a car, I had a place to live, and I was showing up at work every day. So I said, well, I, you know, the alcohol, it can't be, I can't be controlling my life. I'm still in control. And so, I was going to work every day. I was not a day drinker, but, God help you if you got between me and that first drink as soon as I got out of work. And by the time I got to work the next day, I was nursing a nasty hangover, and I know that I was not, to say that I wasn't a pleasant person to work with would be an understatement. So, on the outside, if you looked on my life at my life, you would think that things were sort of proceeding normally. And because of my father's alcoholism in the family, my drinking and my problems related to that really flew under the radar. So I was just sort of flying solo. It really came to a head on one night where I went to a party in Brooklyn. came on my way home. I was blind drunk. I started driving on the wrong way up a ramp to get on the FDR Drive. I don't know if any of you who are on here know that that's one of the major highways around New York. And so I was about to get onto this highway going the wrong way when a car came down the other side of the ramp, and a guy rolled down the window and said, "Hey, pal, I think you better turn around." And that was kind of my first God moment right there, where I knew that it was over for me. So I did turn around, and I got home that night. And I vowed, that within the next few weeks I would stop drinking, which I did. And what I did is, I was not intending to go to AA. I did not really have an introduction to AA. So I thought, well, now that I've come to believe that alcohol is something that I need to put behind me, I'll just do it. I'll just do it on my own. I mean, Robert can do this on his own, can he? Well, I wouldn't recommend that for anyone, but that was a really valuable experience for me, because the few months that I went through as a dry drunk were worse and scarier than any period that I had faced when I was doing a daily drinking, because now I had untreated alcoholism without the alcohol to blunt any of those fears that I was experiencing. Beside having, the intense urge to drink, all the self-centered fear that I was drinking to tramp down just was flying up to the surface. And it really felt like I had woken up on the I had woken up on the operating table with no anesthesia. So fortunately, I ran into a person that I had known for years, who had been a fellow drinker of mine, and sort of known as the town drunk. And he had recently come back from a rehab and had started attending meetings of AA. And he gradually, very gradually, coaxed me into coming to my first meeting. And I've heard a lot of people say in the program that they came to their first meeting, they walked in the door, and oh, what a blessing. I knew I was home from the very start. And that was very much not my experience. And I had a very slow recovery. I started out going to the biggest meetings that I could possibly find. I stood as far in the back as I could. I was not ready to speak. I was not ready to share or say I was an alcoholic. If the chairperson started calling on people at the back of the room, I just left and went to the bathroom. But as I've heard it said in AA, if you bring the body, the mind will follow. And that's very much what happened to me. Somehow, as out of it as I was, something was seeping into me. So I gradually weaned myself off this very large meeting. That was really a wild and raucous meeting. It was downstairs from a detox, and there would be fights breaking out in the hallway and sheriffs coming in. And but that's what I needed at the time. My friend who had become my sponsor, he said, "Yeah, this is like bars without alcohol," and that's what I still needed. I was not ready to step away from the chaos when I first came in. So gradually, I started going to some smaller meetings, and I was fortunate to start attending a step meeting, and somebody passed me a book. It was a third step meeting. I read a paragraph, I passed it along. And that was the first day I really felt like, hey, maybe I belong in this place. Maybe I can fit in. And something really miraculous started happening for me in the rooms, because I was never a good listener. As Julie was saying, there were all different types of people in the meeting. I was a kind of person who I spent my time with all people who were my age, who looked like me, same background, same race, same belief system. And all of a sudden, I was in a room full of people who were vastly different than me. And I heard them saying these things that were just that that really resonated so strongly with me. It was the first time I really, opened my ears and listened. Julie was talking about those crusty old timers at the B when she first came in, and I really hope I haven't become that way. But there was an old timer in one of the first meetings I went to who used to always say, you got to take the cotton, got to take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth, and that's exactly what I did. I just shut up and I listened. It was the first time that I really shut all that noise going on in my mind and listened to what other people had to say. Whatever craziness was happening in my life, I could shut it off for 1 hour and I could just really listen to what those people said. And I learned to really feel close and love those people like family. And that was the first time that I started embracing the concept of a higher power. I had been brought up in a religious home, although my mother was Catholic and my father was Jewish, so I grew up somewhere between Maron and Oy Vey, I like to say, but so it's kind of a confused religious upbringing, but it never really sunk in. But I could see a higher power at work in the rooms. I could really feel that power. And I'm very grateful that I still feel that power today. I've done a lot of things wrong in AA. I'm not any kind of a an AA perfection story. I've had a slow recovery. It took me years to get through the steps. But one thing that has never left me is that joy I feel going to the meetings. I still go to them. I've lived in three different places in sobriety. I grew up in Rockland County, which is across the river from where I live now in Westchester County, and I lived for 7 years in Queens, a borough in New York City. And each of those places, I've gotten a home group and a sponsor, and I've connected with people. When I hear about people who have gone out, the first line is always the same. I stopped going to meetings and I can always fill in the I can always fill in the what happens after that. And as Julie said before, I've turned my life and my will over alcohol to my higher power and this program. But the ism is still there in my life every day, and that ism is all centered around self-centered fear. That is really the driver of all my defects. It's that feeling that wants to tell me that that Robert is the higher power, and that more Robert in any situation can make it better, and that is often not the situation. It's as I've heard someone else say in the program, does this need to be said? Does it need to be said right now? And does it need to be said by me? And usually the answer to that, all three of those questions, is no. So I've learned to keep my mouth shut. I can't say that I know from the promises. I can't say that there aren't still situations that baffle me. But now at least I have enough wisdom to keep my mouth shut until I can figure them out. Julie was talking a lot about the service in the program, and I try to pitch in when asked, but I also feel, for the first time, I feel I'm available for the people in my life who are not in the program, who need me to be of service to them. My mother, my wife, the people in my family, the people outside the room. So, to me, the concept of service goes beyond what I can do in the program. It's very easy for me to feel that kinship with people in the program and want to help them. But the challenge is, can I take that feeling with me to the people I meet outside? Can I take it to the guy in the checkout line who's got 20 items in the 10 item line? I don't know. But I do have one good serenity calculator, and it's parked in my garage right now, and it's my car. And every day that I get in my car, I can tell just how serene I am. Because if I'm not, if I'm letting all the other drivers do what they do, and I'm not trying to get into any kind of road rage incident with them, and I've got my middle finger purely under control, and I'm behaving myself on the road. I'm doing my speed limit, and I'm minding my own business. I guess it's going to be a good day. So really, I'm done. I'm really grateful to be here, and Paola, thank you very much for asking me.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Robert. That was so beautiful. I really like how you share about the progression of the disease, the progression really. And also when Robert said, bring the body and the mind will follow. I remember also those moments when I just needed to get to a meeting and just get to a meeting. And I also remember not wanting anybody to know that I was new or not. I just wanted to be there and just listen. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you both for being here. What an inspiration. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting. So it is also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And I would like to invite Julie if she can close the meeting with the prayer of your choice. And thank you.
Thank you, Paola. Let's do the Serenity Prayer to close this meeting. God, grant me the
And
serenity
serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Difference. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, everybody.